The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Case 32 from the Gateless Gate. The Buddha responds to an outsider. An outsider asked the world-honored one, "I do not ask for the spoken. I do not ask for the unspoken." The world-honored one just sat still. The outsider praised him, saying, "The world-honored one, with his great compassion and mercy, has opened the clouds of my delusion and enabled me to enter the way." He then made bows and took his leave. Ananda asked, "What did that outsider realize to make him praise you?" The world-honored one said, "He is like the fine horse who runs even at the shadow of the whip." Wu Men's verse, "Walking along the edge of a sword, running along the ridge of an iceberg, no steps, no ladders, jumping from the cliff with hands open." So here we are in the first day of our Rohatsu Sesshin. Rohatsu Sesshin is one of the special events of the year in the Buddhist calendar, in the Zen calendar in particular, in this Sesshin we celebrate the Buddha's awakening. I think we all know the story of the young prince Siddhartha, born in great luxury, shielded from the world, but then he sneaks out of the palace. Of course, as we all must do, sneaking out of whatever palace, whatever prison we think we are held in. And the Buddha encountered sickness, old age, and death. He was so troubled. And he also encountered someone wandering, a wandering mendicant, someone who had given up everything to look for the truth. And he knew, as all of us sitting here know, that he had to do something. He couldn't just go on. Things as they were was no longer tenable. So he set out on his great quest, this great quest that you and I are on right here as we sit this December day, the ground frozen, snow covering the ground, days growing shorter. We too set out on this this adventure. And the story goes that the Buddha encountered many different kinds of masters, many different paths, and tried a number of them and grew quite adept. And several teachers offered to make him their successor, but he was not satisfied. And he tried so many different things, which of course all of us have done. Tried so many different strategies, so many different ways. Then it's said that the Buddha, when he was completely discouraged, completely had exhausted all of the possibilities, he sat down under a ficus tree, under a bo tree, and he decided that he would not get up until he got to the bottom of it. And so he sat under this tree. And he sat for some long period of time. And as he sat, he did not have a delightful retreat that was calm and easy. Apparently, he too, like you and me, was assailed by his doubts, by the forces of delusion personified as Mara and Mara's armies. And it is said that he did not defeat the armies of Mara, but that he saw through them, saw into the heart of this delusion, saw into the heart of desire, and saw that everything is simply alive, everything is light, coming together in this form and that form, and that when he saw the morning star, after the darkness, the long darkness of the night, the morning star arose, and he realized the truth of the oneness of all life, the truth of life and death, and he had a great awakening. And how wonderful that what he saw was not the northern lights, not something spectacular or unusual, but the morning star often can be seen, just a planet appearing and then disappearing as the day comes. And it's said that at first he had no desire to teach, but eventually was recognized by some old friends and persuaded to teach. And so this is the beginning of the trouble that we find ourselves in now. This trouble of being on the path. And this story, this lovely koan story, Buddha responds to the outsider. We'll be looking into these next few days for a couple reasons. One, because the one of the main characters is the world-honored one, the Buddha. The Buddha did not call himself the Buddha. Buddha means simply one who is awake, but called himself the one who is here, the one who has thus come. And in the movement that arose after him, he is called many things, but in this case, he is called the world-honored one. And he is questioned by someone we know as the outsider, someone not in the club, someone not in the Sangha. Oftentimes, I think Zen can appear to be an inside deal, and you need to know the secret handshake and the proper way to turn when you're leaving the altar, or it's all lost. But here, the outsider is the one who enters into this very brief dialogue, might even call it a monologue, with the Buddha. And then the other character is Ananda. And Ananda was the Buddha's cousin and was totally devoted to the Buddha, followed him everywhere. And Ananda is said to have had a mind that could remember every word spoken by the Buddha. But one of the stories of Ananda in this mythology, in this in these stories of Zen, is that Ananda did not come to awakening until after the Buddha died. Ananda devoted, but did not yet see, could not yet see into this matter. So the story opens. Outsider comes to the Buddha. You come to the Sesshin. And the outsider maybe has heard about Buddhism, has heard about this teacher. Of course, there was no Buddhism then, just heard of this this teacher who was meeting people and seemed to have something unusual to say. And the outsider came and he said, "I do not ask for the spoken. I do not ask for the unspoken." So in one hand, this could seem like a rather intellectual question. Maybe he's coming trying to trick the Buddha. And in all these koans, all of these stories, we are invited to dream into the story, to be all of the different characters. So you are the outsider, I am the outsider. You are the Buddha, I am the Buddha. Maybe he was asking some intellectual question, but what happens next in the story leads me to believe that he was asking some essential question. Some essential question of his soul. I do not ask for the spoken, I do not ask for the unspoken. So maybe beyond this and that, beyond the self and all that is not the self, beyond the duality of me and you, beyond the duality of life and death, what is it? What is it, this life? Such a deep and mysterious question that's actually hard to bring into focus. The mind, of course, filled with so much chatter, so much judging and comparing. But beyond the comparing, beyond whether you're a good Zen student or a terrible Zen student, beyond the words and phrases, what is it? As we sit, as we walk along this path, we sometimes speak of rousing the bodhicitta, rousing the way-seeking mind. And this bodhicitta, the heart energy, awakened energy, each one of us has. And this bodhicitta, sometimes it can appear as this deep longing. We might say the bodhicitta, your bodhicitta, is what brings you back again and again, or brings you for the first time, or the second time, or the umpteenth time. This deep mystery of life. In our sutra service, we chanted, as we always do, the five remembrances. I am of the nature to grow old. I am of the nature to get ill. I am of the nature to grow old. Each one of us will die, and everyone around us will die. And we are here so briefly. Of course, sometimes time passes so slowly, but also passes so quickly. The little person that you were, the little toddler, where is that person now? In fact, where is anything else other than just this moment? And the teaching is in some ways rather monotonously clear. What you are searching for is already here. So hard to slow down enough. We're off searching everywhere else before we even know it. And so this outsider, this a deep practitioner, I think we can assume, comes to the Buddha with his most sincere question, deepest question. And then the Buddha, the world-honored one, just sat still. Of course, there are many kinds of stillness and many kinds of silence. But this stillness of our Zazen practice is the stillness of the Buddha. And this stillness is a dynamic stillness. This stillness of Zazen is the stillness of life. And in this stillness, everything is manifested. The Buddha just sat still. He had no clever explanation. But apparently the Buddha's stillness was a mighty thing to behold. This human being who had given his life, who had worked so hard, there was something about him that drew people to him. People wanted to be in his presence. There was something happening. And so the Buddha's stillness was not a refusal to answer, was not an avoidance of the question, but a full presentation of the thing itself. So many ways to sit still. Maybe sometimes as we sit, we're conscious of receiving the sounds or receiving the breath. We pay attention and we notice how all of the sounds, all of the world appears, including that lovely little burrowing sound we're getting from out in the hallway. But we can notice the sounds, we can receive here sitting with each other, so important to allow yourself to be supported by the people sitting next to you, sitting across to you, across from you. We are indeed rowing the boat, and we are the boat that is being rowed. Don't worry about trying to do this on your own. You cannot do it on your own. So we come together in Sangha. We come together in this ancient form of practice. And so important to allow yourself to be supported. I got interested in swimming distances when I was a teenager. And I was a hard worker and I was determined, and almost drowned the first time I tried to swim all the way across the lake. because there was some quality of I knew how to work hard and I worked very hard. But after swimming and swimming and swimming and being in the water, slowly I began to trust the water, to trust that the water would hold me up. And very gradually over time, I learned as I swam to relax instead of trying to make sure that I did not sink. I sunk into the water and allowed the water to support me. And as I learned to do that, swimming became much easier. And I think about our Zazen practice. If you think you have to work hard all the time, some way that's true, but also important to begin to see that you are not sustaining your life. Although you chose to come here and a wonderful and a foolish decision on your part, but here you are, here we are. So can we lean into, can we allow the breath to breathe us? Can we soften this delusive notion that it's up to us? If I don't remember to breathe, I'll be in trouble. No, the breath knows what to do. The heart and the liver and the spleen, all of it knows what to do. Thank goodness. So there is this quality of receiving and being supported, being buoyed up. And also in our practice, another quality is entering into. Sometimes we speak about the bodies of Buddha, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nirmanakaya. Dharmakaya is the source world, the deep silence, the deep stillness of which nothing can be said, no words, no this or that. The Sambhogakaya is the, we say sometimes, the appreciation body. Out of the silence and stillness, something arises, a sound in the hallway, a car passing by, a sensation in the knees or shoulders, thought in the mind. This is the dream body, the world of koans and encounters from thousands of years ago. Sambhogakaya, dream body. And then Nirmanakaya is the action body, the activity body. Doing something, engaging in what we are doing. And this is this body, this Nirmanakaya, is what Lin Shi is talking about when he says, do nothing. Do nothing. So we are actively engaged here as we sit in this stillness. And in this active engagement, it is not about getting somewhere else, but it is about manifesting yourself. Of course, you cannot be someone else, even if you would dearly like to be someone else. So in our Zazen, part of our Zazen is giving up. Maybe very slowly giving up this idea that there is something else and allowing ourselves to be who we are, allowing what is here to be here. And in this way, each of us is manifesting the Buddha, manifesting this awakened nature, which includes everything. This awakened nature is not this as opposed to that. In this way, Dogen reminded us in the self-receiving samadhi reading we did this morning that any idea you have of awakening is not awakening itself. Any idea you have is part of the world of this idea as opposed to that idea. But there is this fullness of life that is already and always manifesting itself. And we spoke last night about each one of us being the pivot point of Sesshin, each one of us manifesting. Each one of us manifesting our great love for this precious life without moving a muscle, without saying a word. This is the stillness of the Buddha. This is the Buddha's response to the outsider, this stillness. And the outsider then said, wow, thanks a lot. I see, I feel, I know. The world honored one with his great compassion and mercy has opened the clouds of my delusion and enabled me to enter the way. He then made bows and took his leave. So the outsider got it. He got something. He was grateful for the Buddha's eloquence. Something, this transmission of life itself happened. And the outsider was grateful. And this gratitude and this appreciation, such an important part of our practice. And I think as we open our heart, and as our heart is opened, of course, you cannot open your heart already open, but we can notice and we can head in that direction of letting ourselves be, of letting life be, of receiving and using this moment, manifesting this moment, allowing ourselves to be seen, to see and be seen. I had a friend once who was going for an adventure in the Alps and was thinking about how to prepare herself, and she wanted to really open her heart to receive the beauty of the Alps and the high altitude. And I encouraged her at the same time to allow herself to be seen by the Alps. Dogen talks about this, fences and grasses manifest the Dharma for the benefit of you and me, and you and me manifest the Dharma for the benefit of the floors and the windows and the pots in the kitchen. There is this mutuality happening at this moment. And then Ananda, after the outsider leaves, Ananda says, what did that outsider realize that made him praise you? And how wonderful, because Ananda is kind of clueless, right? Wonderful to have these clueless people like you and me in the koans. Maybe hard for some of us to identify with the Buddha, but I think most of us can identify with the, I don't quite get it. Something happened, the outsider, this one who's not even one of the inner circle of the Sangha, he came and he received something. What did he understand? A wonderful question. What did the outsider understand? Ananda here, so sincere and so willing to reveal himself, willing to be revealed. Sometimes if there's you're in company, or if I'm in company and someone tells a joke, if I don't understand, I'll still nod my head, chuckle a little bit. Our little 15-month-old granddaughter now, when people are at the dinner table, if other people laugh, she'll start laughing. She has no idea what we're talking about, I assume. I mean, who knows? But she joins in, and many of us have a tendency to cover over, oh yeah, I understood what that Dharma talk was about, when maybe we have no clue. And so Ananda here, a wonderful exemplar. Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't get it. And the not getting it is equal to the getting it. And then the Buddha's last line, he says, speaking of the outsider, he is like the fine horse who runs even at the shadow of the whip. And this is a reference to one of the sutras that talks about different horses. The best horse goes just when they see the shadow of the whip. Horses not quite so good need to feel just a little bit of the whip on their hair. Some need the whip to penetrate their flesh, and some horses don't run until the whip penetrates into the marrow. And when we hear a schema like this, many of us think, well, it's better to be the fine horse. But a fine horse, medium horse, poor horse, we are all of these. All of us in some way are motivated. We hear one story of one koan, and we find the energy to come to this moment, to enter here, enter into this story, enter into this breath. And sometimes we are like the worst horse and just wandering in our mind and discouraged and thinking, well, this probably will be the last time I sign up for a crazy thing like this. We are all of this. And our life unfolds as it unfolds. Many of us wish that we were a little wiser, a little more awakened than we appear to be. But yet all of us in each moment are exactly where we need to be. As I think one of us said, maybe me last night, your karma has brought you right here. In this very moment, karma ripens and all things come to be, says Hogan Bass. So this moment, the ripening of your karma in the form of whatever is present, whatever is here in this moment of your experience. This is the fullness of your life with nothing left out. No such thing as a fast horse or slow horse. Just this. This breath, this body, the sunlight coming in, sun so low in the sky these days as we come toward the darkest days of the year. And here we are tucked inside, beginning, or we might even say now in the middle of this Rohatsu Sesshin. This Sesshin celebrating this story of this human being like you and me. And investigating this story where an outsider asked the world-honored one, I do not ask for the spoken, I do not ask for the unspoken. The world-honored one just sat still. The outsider praised him, saying, the world-honored one with his great compassion and mercy has opened the clouds of my delusion and enabled me to enter the way. He then made bows and took his leave. Ananda asked, what did that outsider realize to make him praise you? The world-honored one said, he is like the fine horse who runs even at the shadow of the whip. And Wu Men's verse, walking along the edge of a sword, running along the ridge of an iceberg, no steps, no ladders, jumping from the cliff with hands open. Thank you. So let's set up our room for the Dharma dialogue. We can put the bell away. And people come from behind the wall. So now the opportunity to look into this together. What touched you? What seems important? I think my Dharma talk was a little different than the Buddha's, but perhaps useful too. Yeah, Bix.
Yeah, so I just appreciated this pointer of the sort of equality of whether or not you think your practice is going well. Because the last residential session, maybe some people remember, I had this story that my practice was going really well. This session, I'm coming in with a story that my practice isn't going well. I guess just this reminder with what was said in the Dogen reading of awakening can't, your mind, you can't keep track of your own awakening or your own practice. So,
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Right? No place to stand and look at it. And I think it can be really useful, though, to know that it's like this, because we are going to make up stories. And if you try to stop the stories, then that's another story you get embroiled in. So you can kind of just smile to yourself, all right, yeah, this is my thought now, and then get back to business. Yeah, thanks, Bix. Ray.
Thank you, Dave, for your talk. And I appreciated you telling the story of Buddha leaving his palace or his prison, and the importance of the encounters that he had. For me, I heard he encountered the suffering of sickness, and allowed that to transform him. That was his transmission, if you will. And sickness, old age, and death were really transformative. And it's like life set him up for the next encounter with the mendicant.
Yeah.
And then he was ready to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then he left and went through his process. And I think what for me, what a sign of his suffering was his compassion, which is what led him to teach. He could not do otherwise as to manifest his awakening, but to share it in compassion to those who asked for it. And so it leads me to that same, who knows, that intuition, that thing that he saw in the mendicant, that awakened in him, was what awakened in the other person, the other, who was ready for it. It didn't need anything.
Yeah.
And so...
You know, I really appreciate what you're saying, Ray. I think part of this way, and David pointed to it, I can't see you anymore. There you are. the quivering with, like compassion in English anyway, comes from the Latin suffering with, you know, and karuna in Sanskrit means something similar. This you can't do this alone. This is what David was saying. You think you can. I mean, you'll make up all kinds of stories in your isolation. But that quivering with was a teaching for him. And then when he was under the Bodhi tree, and I don't know if anybody knows, but this is a Bodhi tree. The ficus in here is a Bodhi tree. It was a little tiny plant, just a few inches tall when it was given to us many years ago now. I don't remember when. That sitting under there, he encountered first the demonic forces of Mara, which we all encounter in the room, and quivered with them probably. And then you know, Mara later, the legend is, became his good friend. So this is this encountering everything as a friend, encountering everything as the most intimate thing. And then he took what Dogen calls the backward step. He just sat still. We emphasize this so much because it's so powerful. We tend to move away from, right? So when we come to this, then we encounter something else that's not outside of us. None of that stuff is outside of us. And then to the capper, he sees the morning star. Again, outside of him, but not anymore. He doesn't exist like that anymore. It's just everything is here. So I hadn't really thought about this until you said it, but he really left himself open. Like David said, the heart is always open, but we do put blocks in front of it. So he was open to all of this. And that's what we have to do right here in this room. Stay open, 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 and still. So hard to do. Thank you.
I noticed, Ray, that you talked about the Buddha being ready and then talked about the outsider being ready. And, you know, there's then a third character who's not ready, Ananda. And David mentioned that Ananda does not have realization until after the Buddha's death. And so, you know, from the Buddha's standpoint, he was never ready. And I think that's important. That's an important pointer for us also. That we have to be willing to be Ananda as well as the outsider. It's so, you know, it's so tempting to just say, I want to be like the outsider. I want to be the one who's ready. But sometimes our role is to be Ananda, and sometimes it goes back and forth. You know, I'm not dividing us up into Anandas and outsiders, but each one of us, as David said, each one of us is all four of those horses. Each one of us is Ananda as well as the outsider. So just holding to that too.
Yeah. Laura.
As I was listening to the story and being the outsider and being in all the different parts, I was realizing one of the things I love so much about this practice is it's like a giant permission slip. And I was thinking about that, the outsider seeing, just sitting in stillness, like, oh, what? That's it? Like, you know, it's permission for everything. And interesting even to look at the part of me that wants that, that still needs it, because I don't even need it. But there's a yearning for the permission, that, like, feeling, like, is that really? Like, I always feel that, like, over and over in this practice, wait, but really? Like, this too? And I keep just testing it. And I notice, like, that is the part that touches my heart so much. And sometimes I notice it in my partnership, because I think my partner must know it in me too, because he's started to, everything I do, he just tells me, you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to feel that way. You're allowed to be that way. And then he's like, kind of, I can get hear of how much I love that and embody it, and he gives it back to me in that way. But yeah, just this giant permission slip.
Well, and I love it, for me too, all of these teachings, I get it, and then it just drifts away a little bit, and then, like, really? You know, and when it touches, when it drops in, oh, just sitting, I don't have, oh, you know, it new every time. Yeah. Thanks, Laura. Yeah, Deb.
I was really struck by this mystery of stillness, that there's different kinds of stillness, like that it just struck me, like, oh, what are the different kinds of stillness? Like, what is stillness? I don't know.
Yeah.
It was like a question.
A question you ask to yourself.
Yeah.
Well, and I think David used the word dynamic to describe the Buddha's stillness. That's a kind of a stillness. You know, it's not a frozen stillness.
Yeah.
He was really answering the outsider's question. It wasn't just like, I don't know what to say here. I'm going to just look wise and not say anything. Yeah. And I think this is what we're doing here.
Thanks. Will?
I'm going to take the bait. What's the difference between the Buddha's response and the unspoken word, which the outsider didn't want?
Yeah. That's... just what is it? Well, what is it? Right? That's what you need to write.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So find out.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anne.
Well, if I'm going to put myself in each character, and I was the outsider, I would be lying. I'd say, "Oh, this isn't what I wanted," and I'd walk away. Mm. I'd say, "Oh yeah, why do we assume?" It's true. Why don't we assume he's human and could just not want the unspoken word? Just say, I'm not going to get what I need to be walking away.
Well, just from what he says, he was clearly grateful and said, so from what he says, something happened to him that we're dreaming into. He didn't just say, oh, thanks for nothing, which many of us would do. You know, we encounter something and we say, well, thanks for nothing. I didn't need that. But so from his words, something happened. And so he's talking about some moment. And all of us know this moment. All of us have these moments where it just opens and you see the sunlight on the floor, or you have this moment. Laura's talking about, like, oh, it's really okay to be me, right? So there are those moments, and it seems like from the dialogue that the outsider had something. He was touched in some deep way that made him grateful. That Ananda didn't, well, what, you know, what's he doing? But something happened to that outsider, and I want to say something happens to each one of us, right? This is not something that we're strangers to.
And I think there's also something going on here. I'm really struck by what Alan said about some of us are ready and some of us are not ready. Mm-hmm. You know, that we really do talk about enlightenment as an accident, right? So we can't make it happen, right? It happens or it doesn't happen. So it happened for the outsider, but it didn't happen at that moment for Ananda. And it did later, because he was the third ancestor after the Buddha, the third Indian ancestor. But there's something else going on here about readiness and willingness. So the outsider, in some translations of this, he's called a non-Buddhist philosopher, which I love. Right? He's got his own thing that he's doing, and he's really devoted to it. Many of us have our own things that we're doing, and we're really devoted to that sense of the way the world is. And he remained an outsider. This was his only encounter with the Buddha, according to the story. And then he just left. You know that. And meanwhile, there's Ananda. You know, Ananda, utterly devoted to the Buddha, every sutra that starts, thus have I heard, or thus I hear, that's Ananda's voice. He stayed with the Buddha and memorized everything the Buddha said. And after the Buddha died, he just regurgitated it. I felt like saying that to Will when he said, I'm taking the bait. Just swallow it, digest it, and then spit it out at us. Right? This is what Ananda did. Such a devotional thing. And so the timeline is irrelevant, right? But we all have a chance to make a commitment to something. Or to remain outsiders, or something in between, right? We always say, in Boundless Way, we have, you know, core people who do everything, come to every sesshin, and, you know, do all this kind of stuff. And then the little ripples outside, we call it the mandala. And then there are people way at the edges who dip in every once in a while. So we have outsiders and we have Anandas. And you can actually choose which one you want to be. Ultimately, at the beginning you can't, because you can only enact what you can do in your life. Right? So I think, I mean, for me, Ananda is my great hero. He just threw himself in, and it didn't matter what happened. And the Buddha died, his cousin, his beloved wise guy, he died. But he kept serving the next ancestor, Mahakashapa, devotedly. And there are many stories about that. And then he woke up. And Mahakashapa recognized him as his Dharma heir. So all paths lead to this. And everybody has to find their own way.
Well, then let's restore the Zendo and continue finding our ways.